I am today speaking with Venora Bennett, who is a writer and journalist and has just had a book come out called The White Russian. Her talk for the Literary Festival will be happening on Thursday, the 26th of March at 12 p.m. at the Bodleian Divinity School, and you can get tickets for that off the Literary Festival website. So I should start by saying hello to Venora.
Hello.
This talk for the festival, it's mainly going to be about your new book, is that right?
That's right, exactly. The book is set among the white Russian emigres who escaped from Russia after the revolution. And sooner or later, by one way or another, many thousands of them ended up in Paris, where they eked out a really quite miserable existence for a couple of generations until the Second World War, when a lot of them saw sense and went off to America or married French people and the community kind of evaporated. But in that time, there were loads and loads of Russians in Paris. And that's my setting.
And it's sort of a love story as well, isn't it? Is that right?
Yeah, it's a love story that morphs into a kind of thrillery crime thing. There's a shocking event that happens sort of two-thirds of the way through, which you realise when you get there, you kind of knew all along this bad thing was going to happen.
Right.
But it's not completely indicated at the start. So yes, a love story and a crime story.
Okay. And your background is in, I mean, you studied Russian at Oxford.
I did, yes. So I'll be going home in a way. My French teacher at school was from one of these white Russian families and she'd grown up in Paris. She used to kind of groom her pupils, all these little French pupils. And one day I got the call and she said, Lavi, you can do grammar and I think you'd better do Russian. So I did, and the die was cast. So it was quite easy if you spoke a little bit of a difficult language, even if badly, to get into Oxford. And then, you know, and then you were going to go and work in Russia. And so my life was kind of all decided and set at that moment, and I didn't know. But it was good, and I really enjoyed my years in Oxford.
You were in Oxford a few years ago, is that right, to go to the Stradivarius exhibit at the Ashmolean?
Yes, absolutely.
Was that the last time you were here, or have you been back?
I'm trying to think. I was there then, and yes, that must have been, yeah, that was more recently. And then there was a really interesting day at St. Peter's, where there was a big sort of extravaganza done by the BBC about Grossman's book, Life and Fate, which someone at the BBC had loved and made a big song and dance about it. It's a fantastic book. And I went and spent a day listening to talks about it and really enjoyed that too.
Okay. You've written other books about Russia as well. Your last one was about violin makers in Russia.
It was.
I read that you've been making your own violin, or is that finished now?
No, I have finished it.
Wow.
I have to learn to play it, which is... seems a bit harder. But all the time I was writing that book, Midnight in St. Petersburg, which had a refugee girl sort of falling on her feet with a family of violin makers in St. Petersburg, but then the revolution hits and it sweeps them all away. My secret ulterior motive was partly that I'd always wanted to make a violin. And by making it into work and research for that book, I somehow finally motivated myself to go. And I'm afraid I betrayed Oxford because I found a fantastic violin making workshop in Cambridge. And I used to go on Wednesdays and go and do it. And they were lovely. It was great. And the violin makers in the book are very much related to, they say a lot of the same things that people said in my real life violin class.
Has anyone played it? Have you got any confirmation that it's good?
Yes, it's quite good. Yeah. And yes, my parents are musicians, so various old ladies have played it or got their pupils to play it, who are kind of connected to my parents, and they all say, I mean, perhaps very politely, that it sounds good, but I like the way it sounds.
I went to a violin workshop when I was growing up because I also grew up musically, and at the end they brought out a Stradivarius actually, and we were allowed to touch it, but we weren't allowed to play it. So I have touched one, but I haven't played one.
I would hardly dare. I was looking at all this Strads sort of locked away in their boxes at that exhibition and sort of thinking, you know, what if someone did put that into your hand? Mm-hmm. You'd be so terrified to drop it or something. They have that kind of religious feel about them, don't they now?
Yeah.
Midnight in St. Petersburg, my violin that comes into it, there's a Strad, in fact, that comes into it, where a rich client of this family offers my heroine the chance to repair this violin, which is a Strad. And he was this sort of fabulously wealthy and entitled young man. He was one of the people who killed Rasputin. Mm-hmm. And he was famously, like, very, very naughty. And so I had him to explain why the violin was broken. I had him remembering how he had he'd used it with his brother as a child. They duelled with these priceless violins, and it was supposed to be the ultimate sign of how ridiculously over entitled they felt that they could do anything.
So why did you want to return to Russia, or, well, I suppose not a return to Russia if it's in Paris, but why did you want to go back to these kind of themes in your new book?
Yeah, it's funny. Russia is such a sort of love-hate thing. You go to Russia and you kind of love it and you hate it about 20 times a day, and there's never anything in between. And half the time, I lived in Russia for donkey's years, for something like 7 years. I spent the whole time planning to leave. And I'd come home and go, oh, it's so boring here. Russia's so much more exciting. And finally, in the age of Skype and novel writing, I've discovered that you can kind of do Russia, but, you know, in your mind, you don't really have to go there and suffer the difficult policemen and things. And I don't know, I just feel that I've got more to explore about that. It was always, from when I was a very small child, this place. I don't know why, I have no Russian blood or anything, but I was always really fascinated by Russia. And when I was a toddler, I had my invisible friend was Mr. Kaczynska, who lived under the under the stove and had to be fed Smarties. And I don't know, I must have met a nice old Russian or something before I remember. I have no idea what it was. So I don't know, it's just a place that's always really fascinated me.
Do you think it's going to continue then? Might there be another book in the making?
I'm going to write another non-fiction book, and I'm going to go back to the Russian Revolution, and there was a thing I found out in doing some research for that novel set in the Russian Revolution that I'd quite like to go and have another bite at. So yes, one more, but I really think after that I've got to stop. we're so kind of, I don't know, it just seems so strange to be fascinated by this sort of cultural side of Russia, and at the same time be reading and getting quite aerated about Russia v Ukraine and the way things are now. So who knows? After that, we'll see.
Do you think that the sort of current situation, or maybe the politics, are going to be touched on in your talk? I don't know, either by you, or do you think people might bring it up in a Q&A?
Well, I did notice that I did a Q&A at the end of a talk recently, and that's all anyone wanted to talk about, and they were all journalists. It was quite frightening. They were so much better informed than I was. But yes, it's on people's minds. And I think, Russia seems more clearly not a very friendly force these days. And to me, it doesn't seem that clear that anything substantive has really changed, because in the 90s I spent a lot of time reporting on Chechnya and getting very indignant about the way the Russians reported the Chechen war and how mendacious it all seemed. And when I read the news about Ukraine and see people getting angry about the mendacious way Russians report on the Chechen conflict, what's happening in Ukraine, I think, you know, you should have read the stories of Chechnya. It was all the same then. It's obviously, it's all out of the same textbook. But yes, no, it's very much more on the public radar, isn't it?
Perhaps even makes it more important to have a kind of alternative dialogue, even if it's in the form of novels or other kind of ways of looking at Russia, maybe.
Yes, I think there's something to be said for that. And there has been, I mean, rather strangely, I suppose, 2014 was the British-Russian year of friendship, and there were an awful lot of cultural exchanges. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, various friends of mine are doing cultural things with Russia, and they're all a little bit nervous about whether their exhibitions or whatever it is are still to be scheduled by this time next year. But let's hope they are, because that is a way of tapping into a better form of relationship.
Yeah. Have you been involved in the literary festival before?
Yes, I have. I came, I think, a couple of times, but it was quite a long time ago. And I was interviewed, once was in Oxford and once was at Bicester, I think. Both times by Godfrey Howard, who is now dead, but was a stalwart of the Oxford festival a while ago. So that was my connection.
Are you looking forward to being involved again? And
yes, it's very exciting, and I'm going to come and spend the day and have a good look around and see people. And yes,
yeah, there are other events. Any in particular that you sort of got your eye on?
I'm not sure yet. Actually, I'm a terrible last minute person, so I haven't really worked out my schedule. But I will definitely drop in on some other things. Yeah.
Fantastic. Is there anything else that you want to add about your talk or about your work in general?
Well, I hope that people will come who like music, because there's a little bit of music in it, which I'm going to play. And it's not the violin, but there's a singer who's a character in my book based on a real life person. She's a rather larger than life character. She was a gypsy singer. And she came up from the provinces. She ran away from a nunnery to join the circus, but ended up being a gypsy singer. And she was called the Tsar's Nightingale because she became such a pop star that she was taken to play on in an enormous concert for the Tsar. And but then she went over to the Reds during the Civil War, where she ended up marrying a white colonel who became a general. And she ended up in Paris, and in my book she's very much past her prime, and she's put on a couple of stone, and her voice is going a bit off, and she's obsessed with the idea of getting a recording made of her voice so that all the bad bits can be cut out, and she can sound at her perfect prime and go back to being the Tsar's Nightingale as she used to be. And I found some of the real life woman. She's called Plivitska, and I found some of her recordings, and I'll only do little bursts of them because she does sing very strangely indeed.
Oh, wow. Amazing. Yeah. I feel like I know someone exactly how you're describing, so interested in hearing that. Great. Well, thanks very much for talking to me today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
And we'll see you at the festival.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to it.